Okay, it is 7:00. We will call to order the regular town meeting of the Discovery Bay Board of Directors. If everyone please rise and join our general manager in leading us in the pledge.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Can I please have a roll call?
Roll call to take in on the record show, Honorable President, with the exception of Vice President Director Grant.
Great, thank you so much. I'd like to open up for public comment. So anyone that is in the public is allowed 3 minutes to talk about anything that is not currently on the agenda. Do we have anyone from, please, if you wouldn't mind, let us know your name and thank you.
Rob Martinson, resident for a while. I live across the street from the new surface pickleball tennis courts that look fantastic.
Awesome.
Really good.
Thank you.
Last week, I stopped two guys from climbing over the fence and we're going to play tennis on them. Said, they got a cure, don't do it. Sometimes I'm kind of a Gestapo over there. Tonight, there was a guy out on a skateboard because they're at a lock tonight, going right on a skateboard. And kind of back by it was the Chicago signs, the song, signs everywhere, signs, do this, don't do that. Can't you read the signs? There are no signs. My suggestion is there was some time ago, a year or two, no skateboards, no this or that. There aren't any signs out there. So it makes it harder to tell somebody, hey, you can't be here. They go, why? So, suggestion.
Rob Freely, we appreciate that, but call 911. We'd rather you do that than be...
They're gone in 10 minutes.
I know, but...
yeah.
We don't want you confronting people.
Thank you so much. Yes, sir, please.
Hi there, welcome. Mark Lambert. So first I want to thank everybody for the landscaping efforts that were on the other side of the Clipper. That did make a difference. It's not exactly what I do, but hey, it's a heck of a lot better, so I'm not complaining. And the lights going up there, I think, was an extra nice thing, especially for security at night. So, you know, when I'm doing that, I have to walk the dog more often, and that's what I'm seeing, even though that we've, you know, made comments before and I've had dialogue with the local sheriff and so forth about these kids that are going up and down racing, literally. And then we have traffic that's going like almost 60 miles an hour sometimes up and down Discovery Bay, you know, Boulevard, especially on Clipper Drive. And that's just not cool. So I don't know where we are. The main thing I want to try to ask that if we can revisit the cameras. There was talk about cameras because of crime and vandalism, and I think at least in the high traffic areas, that would warrant it. Part of the backing up I had with this is Cornell Park. I think he must live near. I think I understand that the bathrooms are closed because of that vandalism. Is that Sunrise or something along those lines? And then I was told that porta potty was purchased and paid for by the Little League team. Now these little brat kids come up there and do this. I mean, that's just not cool. I personally think that if you have cameras in the main areas, like the town across the street, Cornell Park, Newport, and Clipper Drive, you will see the majority of everything that's going on. But, you know, these little pocket bikes, my wife said that somebody, they were coming out of Safeway and they were harassing a couple coming out of there, like sexual type comments. That's not cool. It's the same little group. So I've advocated to Charlene that unless I think these guys are laughing at you guys, they know when you're coming and going, they know that there's not much going to happen. I think that if once somebody has a citation, or if a bike is impounded, that word's gonna get out real quick and you're gonna end a lot of problems that we're seeing. Anyway, these are just some clippings I took from my wife's account. I went to her account to try to figure out where she was talking about so that I kind of could have a point of reference. And then the last thing was there's drag racing, apparently. We could hear the drag racing going on, and apparently some other people posted that now the CHP came over. The problem with just talking directly to CHP, unless somebody's right there and there's an accident, they won't respond. It goes in a black hole. we don't have a dial, we don't have a way to reach out to them like that. So I don't know if you guys can help bridge that gap or not, but I think the cameras would do the trick.
Thank you so much. If you wouldn't mind, right over there, and we'll take that. And then if you wouldn't mind also look at the agendas for the next few board meetings. There's going to be some things that we talked about to address Cornell.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
My name is Skip Bergeron, B-E-R-G-E-R-O-N. I've lived here since September 1st, 77. I'm on the 12th house up on the 1343 Discovery Bay Boulevard. I'm the guy with all the roses.
Beautiful.
So I'm the 12th house up from the Shell Station. And I got two issues I'd like to bring up. I got these, my neighbor next door has got these three junkers. And it's an eyesore for the whole neighborhood. There's three of them. But they're not on the street, but they're in the his driveway. And I don't even think if he's the owner, I think he's the son. I don't know if he's offending the law or whatever, but sure, an eyesore. Nobody likes it, the neighbors. And I don't know what we can do about it. My other issue, I think, gentlemen, about all the speeding. I'm out there working my yard. I spend an hour or 2 hours every day in the road in the front. And I tell them when they come by, this is 25. And they're doing 35, 40. And I said, go like that. And they flip me off. And you got these Mickey Mouse little rugrats that probably don't have a license. And they're driving up and back, and now they're staring at me because they know I don't like it. And so I want to do something about it. I don't know what to do about it. We have police, and somebody always says, "Oh, it's a highway patrol thing." And they're always passing the buck. But we're taxpayers. We pay taxes. We'd like to get some issues done, if I may. And I probably went too long.
No, you're totally fine. You're still in the green. Just real quick, I just want to give you a couple things. One, someone from the town can, if you want to stay after, someone from the town can give you some numbers to code enforcement. Unfortunately, we don't, as a town, we don't have any enforcement powers, but we can definitely get you some numbers that you can contact the county and try to get some enforcement that way. And we also have the sheriff in attendance tonight, so I'm sure that your message was heard and...
In the old days, when I'll sit down, we had a homeowners association. When I moved in here, it was $18 a year, big deal. And we had a guy who'd drive up and down, and he'd cite people if you're doing something wrong. It went from 18 to 25, and everybody started crying, and now we don't have Jack. Amen?
And your roses are beautiful. My granddaughter loves them.
Stop by. I've cut 80 already for people.
Oh, my goodness.
And they walk the street with a grill.
You definitely know what you're doing because they're beautiful. Thank you, sir.
Okay.
Do we have anyone online? Okay. Any other public comments? All right. We will close public comment and move to consent calendar.
I make a motion to approve consent calendar.
And a second?
Second.
Awesome. Thank you so much. We got a motion and a second. Can I get a roll call vote, please?
Porter. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Thank you. Moving to area agency liaison reports. Do we have anyone from the supervisor's office?
No.
Okay. Sheriff? Welcome.
Hi. Good evening.
Good evening.
So I have a few things to cover with everyone tonight. First thing I'd like to do is go over the stats for the month of April. For the month, we had approximately 370 calls for service. Of those calls for service, 34 police reports were written. There is, I did notice a trend in the increase of thefts from both CVS and Safeway this last month, so I will address that. Step up patrols there and see if we can't bring that number back down to a more manageable number like we've seen. There is one case on your report that I'd like to discuss. It was a fraud report that was taken on April 18th. The victim lives on the 1700 block of Newport. However, this was a more of an online crime. The victim reported being contacted by Wells Fargo. Somebody fraudulently contacted the victim claiming to be a representative from Wells Fargo. In summary, basically told the victim that they were part of the fraud department and that there was an inside job where this victim's account was being compromised. And in order to rectify that, this victim needed to wire $9,000. Unfortunately, the victim did, in fact, comply with that. $9,000 is a lot. I have seen cases throughout the county upwards of $1 million. So this is just a really good reminder that if you are contacted by somebody from what you think is your financial institution, or I know there's fast track fraud activity going on right now, just make sure to take those extra steps. The victim in this case was not necessarily elderly, maybe older, but not elderly. That's generally the target audience that we see, the victims of these crimes. But I mean, we've seen folks of all ages be the victims of these types of crimes. So just something to be mindful of.
One of the ideas that we're looking at is doing a quarterly newsletter. And it'd be a great idea to have, you know, a message from the sheriff's corner, you know, on all of our newsletters with some type of message about, hey, here's something new, here's something to look out for. Somebody you might want to work with Alan, because I think he's kind of leading that.
Absolutely. Fortunately, our banks have gotten better with, we've actually gotten several calls recently. This individual went into Wells Fargo and proceeded to wire the money. I wish they would take extra steps to call us first to ensure that this transaction is legitimate. That might thwart some of this behavior, but sadly that doesn't always happen. The next thing I would like to present to the board, and this is thanks to Chair Guteau. At the last meeting, you inquired about calls for service and if that was normal or higher or more than normal. So I thought it might be beneficial to put together basically a spreadsheet of the calls for service over the last year, just so that you can have an idea kind of in front of you, quickly summarize the calls for service. As you can see, May of last year, actually the calls were very low, 137. June of last year, they spiked a bit and then they came back down. And then consistently the months August, pretty much through the remainder of the year, around the same number. I would like to add that April of this year, you'll see the number says 262, and obviously I reported a little higher, but that's because I was working closely with our statistical folks to get this report generated before today, so that number reflected was a few days ago. So just wanted to...
Oh, this is a great visual, so thank you.
Yeah, it does help just so you can get an idea.
Yeah. We're actually not doing that bad.
No, it's not too bad. And I think at the last meeting I highlighted some of the reasons that the calls for service can be higher or lower than normal. Oftentimes we do get habitual callers. There's one particular individual in this community that calls frequently. And I will tell you, for the month of April, this person is probably responsible for at least 30 of the calls for service. So each time they call into Sheriff's Dispatch, it populates a new call for service. So that's reflected here. So that just kind of gives you an idea that it may not be, you know, the number is not necessarily reflective of that these are all calls where crimes are involved.
Is that considered abusing the system, though, that many phone calls?
Not in the sense, because they're not using 911. So if they're just calling in on the public line, then no.
The non-emergency line?
Correct. So. Then I would like to move on to an update on our license plate cameras. There is a grant that I've been working on. It's been in the works for almost 4 years. I just installed them last week. There are 12 new cameras in East County. There are two particularly that benefit the town of Discovery Bay. Those cameras are positioned on Cherry Hills Drive, but they capture the vehicles that are on Highway 4. So a good example of that would be a recent theft from our retail stores. The vehicle that was described is very unique. So having that information, now we can use those cameras, assuming that the individual came in from Highway 4 from Stockton, that will benefit us in that regard. So those cameras have been very helpful so far. So I'm excited. It's great for that. Four of the cameras did go up the intersection of Camino de Avalon and Basco, so that will help if we have cases where we're trying to determine which way the suspects came in or exited. We can definitely use those cameras as an investigative lead as well.
Those aren't real-time monitored, though.
Correct. They're what's called license plate cameras. So if you think of like a trail cam, where it only captures like an animal that crosses the camera, these are similar in the sense that it'll only capture license plates as they pass the cameras, and it captures the car and the plate that's affixed to it. So they're not what some might call situational cameras or sit cams.
So kind of like the flock system, but not as it doesn't do as much as the flock system does. You can search the flock system by all trucks with ladders on.
It may not be as comprehensive, but there is an advanced search function that is pretty detailed. So yes, we can search for a red truck between a certain time parameter. So it is pretty it's very comparable to flock. Yes.
Well, hey, it's 12 new cameras we didn't have before, so
absolutely, yeah.
Congratulations, I know.
Yes, it's been a tedious project, so I'm very happy that they're up and running. Next, I would like to thank the board and your assistance with advertising our recent Drug Take Back event, which was held this last Saturday from 10 to 2. We were positioned between Safeway and CVS. Collectively, so the numbers are in, and collectively, for all the sheriff's office locations, we collected 395 pounds of narcotics or drugs. Specifically, the four station houses, including my own, that includes Mir Station, Valley Station, Bay Station, and Delta Station, we collected 132 pounds. So it was a fantastic. I know the amount that we collected was more than we've done so far. So thank you. I know that the efforts on your part definitely assisted with that. And then lastly, just a quick reminder about the Junior Women's Academy that I mentioned at the previous meetings. The deadline to sign up for that is on the 20th, so if you know anyone that's interested, please feel free to remind them that the deadline is quickly approaching. So unless the board has any questions for me,
Is that drug program, is that an annual thing? Is it semi-annual, or what is it?
So it's a national campaign, and it is twice a year.
Good.
So we did the one that we just did Saturday. The next one will be sometime around October. It's usually mid to late October. So I'll start advertising and soliciting for that here very soon. It'll be here before you know it. So.
Good stuff, thanks.
Yes, it's great. And it keeps it, I think you mentioned,
it's helping take it out of our system.
Absolutely.
People aren't flushing down the toilet. They have a place to get rid of them. It doesn't end up causing complications within our water system also.
And I would say it's very safe and quick and easy process.
It keeps the streets too a little bit, right?
What's that? I'm sorry?
It's narcotics, right? So, I mean, people technically could steal those, sell those.
Absolutely. And we don't, like I said, we don't, the boxes that they are placed into get driven directly to Oakland, and they are placed in an incinerary. They're not sorted, they're not, you know, there's no manipulation of them before they're destroyed. So they're taken out of the hands of, you know, kids and families that don't need them, so.
You said that we were 300 and how many pounds?
395.
Once again, Discovery Bay comes through.
Yes. No, it was fantastic. It was a great event. So thank you again.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you.
All right, do we have anyone from fire? Okay. We will move to Matt Adams. Okay. All right. Item G1, discussion and possible action. To pass a resolution to apply California Energy Commission Conservation Assistance Act.
like to introduce John Burnett of Veolia.
Hi. Hello. Thank you. I'm John Burnett of Veolia. And I have some PowerPoint slides here. Some of them you've already seen, but I like to keep them up there just as a refresher because it's been since last year since I stood before you. So at Veolia, we're part of the Sustainable Industry and Building Group. And what we do is we develop programs for our clients to help reduce energy costs, greenhouse gas, and more sustainable and resilient systems for water, wastewater, and communities such as Town of Discovery Bay. So the program that we put together for you leverages all of the organizations that you see below. So the California Energy Commission offers a subsidized loan program to do these types of energy conservation and renewable energy projects, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. Also, the U.S. Department of Energy helps administer some of the grants that we'll be able to get, the Federal Investment Tax Credit grant. And then Pacific Gas and Electric supports our program because we were able to get you under what's called a NEM 2 or Net Energy Metering 2.0 program. So they give us credits when we push renewable electricity out to the grid. And then we are supported by the Department of General Services here in the state of California as an approved energy services company. So with all that being said, next please. So again, some of the challenges, I won't go through them all unless you want me to, but these are some of the challenges that we've identified for the Town of Discovery Bay, from utility grid reliability to resiliency to very high PG&E prices. They just continue to rise in double digits out of them. So how can we hedge against that kind of inflation or escalation? Next, please. So when you download the data right from the CPI, you can see that over the last 40 years, PG&E specifically has increased their rates on average 11.32%. That's right from the data set. In the last 2 years, a little over 2 years, they've gone up 25%. And you know that's hard for people to budget and to plan for. And they're blaming it on wildfire mitigation, the hardening of systems, the adoption of electric vehicles, and the list goes on. So they are a for-profit utility, and what's interesting is the more cost they incur, the more profit. So they're always looking for ways to incur more cost, because they're guaranteed a 10% profit at the end of the day, based on the cost. Next. So the last time we met and I spoke in front of you, we were going to apply for the Net Energy Metering 2.0 program. So what that means is during the summer, we overproduce with solar arrays and then push that electricity to the grid, and PG&E gives us a handsome credit for it. And they changed that program in February to what's called NEM 3, where they reduced the benefit of those credits by 75%. Making it very difficult for folks like yourselves to justify financially installing renewable energy. However, we were able to pull together interconnection applications and get them submitted on the Town of Discovery Bay's behalf, and we are grandfathered in now with the Net Energy Metering Aggregation A 2.0 program for the Community Center and the Willow Water Treatment Facility. So we're going to call this the Phase 1 project. We are working on a larger project at the Wastewater Treatment Plant 1 and 2. However, because those properties were not congruent and adjacent, they will not fall into the NEMA program. But we have made it financially viable by the use of battery energy storage systems, which we'll bring to you at a future date to show you what the economics of that looks like. Next. So a lot of goals there, and One of the main goals was to increase resiliency for critical facilities such as the community center. So one of the things that we'll be developing as part of the program will be to have this facility in an emergency generator in the event that the power fails. You can keep this facility up and running to provide emergency services if you so desire. And then long-term cost savings. There's some inefficient equipment in this building that we can also upgrade and electrify. So heating, ventilation, and air conditioning is potentially on the list. Maybe some of the lighting out in the parking lot, we can fix the wires. The solar canopies will go over the parking lot, so under the canopies, we can put new lighting. There's opportunity to put in some EV chargers. We talked about maybe lighting the area back here where you have concerts. It's pretty dark. And then you'll see the surprise lighting areas in the picture soon enough. But the idea is, you know, to solve a lot of these problems in a way to where we're redirecting money you're already spending to PG&E and investing in these systems that will offset those costs and provide a fixed cost of power over time versus getting caught in their little game of escalation and rate shifts and everything they do to make power more expensive for us.
Quick question.
Go ahead.
Sorry to interrupt. So we're grandfathered in on the NEM 2.0.
Correct.
That just means, have we been approved for something, or we just are approved to be applied for the NEM 2.0?
Okay, so we've applied for the NEM 2.0, and we're approved under that program. So today, what we're asking for is not for you to approve the whole project, but just take the next step and pass a resolution to apply for what's called the California Energy Commission ECA loan, which is the 1% loan, and that requires a board resolution and a finding that the projects are CEQA exempt.
Got it. So prior to applying for that, we have to be in a program. Then, okay, that makes sense.
Right. So we got you grandfathered into the program. Now we're going to ask you to see if we can get the funding. And then if all that works, then we will sit down with your attorney and work through an agreement to implement the program.
John, I have this terrible habit of reading ahead, so I kind of missed a little bit about what you, I wanted, for clarification purposes, though, the two that are grandfathered in, the two properties are this property and the current water treatment plant, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, would that include any future development on this property? Because it's the property? In other words, let's just happen to say that we were going to build an office building right here.
Right.
Would that be grandfathered into the same thing?
It would be, as long as you keep that meter. So whatever meter we have over there, and I believe that meter over there supplies the whole water treatment. So you would just want to tie off from that meter.
Yeah, we would be tied into an existing electrical meter here for this property. Yeah.
You'll be fine.
Okay.
Yeah, cool. Absolutely. Good questions. So right here, we've done some discovery, we've got data collection, we've done a preliminary analysis, we've come up with a conceptual scope of work, and now we're kind of going into this final program development. So this is where we'll finalize the funding solutions, and then we'll sit down with staff and identify what scope we want in there outside of the solar, because the solar provides a significant amount of savings, and we'll show you some of those stats here. It's enough to even buy the property across the street. The savings is so dramatic. but there's a lot of savings there. So you can do some upgrades, some deferred maintenance things as well. So next. So some of the other energy conservation measures that we identified were LED lighting upgrades. So there's a lot of lighting opportunity throughout the town. There's also the microgrid controls for resiliency, which will help keep the facility online in the event of a power outage. And then we also found, for example, you have a gas-fired water heater on the pool out there. We could change that to an electric heat pump. That way you're supplying the fuel for your solar array to heat the pool. Versus burning the natural gas. Same with your HVAC systems here. you have natural gas-fired heating, we could also replace those heat pumps to where they're fueled by electricity from your solar versus the natural gas heating. And there's a couple other little things, like EV chargers, if you want to do that, so on and so forth. Next one. So this is a concept layout of what the solar would look like. And working with staff, it's kind of out of the way of maybe where the office was going to, we put some solar where the new office was potentially proposed to be. And then we started looking at, okay, well, maybe we could cover one of the tennis courts and a couple of the pickleball courts and put some lighting in there underneath the solar. And that would give you some nighttime play, so to speak. And I don't know if you know, but Veolia is the proud sponsor of the Professional Pickleball Association. So if you ever see a professional pickleball tournament on TV, you'll have Veolia all over it.
There's a pickleball channel, you know that, right?
Yeah, I do, yeah. And I've actually gone to two tournaments now, one in Phoenix, Arizona, and one in Fountain Valley, California. And there's one coming up in June in Roseville.
So what you're showing us now is where potential solar panels would be, because you need space to put those panels up on the existing property. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And these are just suggestions, I would say, at this point.
Yeah, at this point, this is concept. We could move them. Right now, all of our cost estimates are based on these locations. And
based on square footage or what?
Yeah.
Probably not the term you use, the term I'll use, square footage. I'm sure you have a different.
You need a certain surface area, right to catch the sun.
Yeah, I'm sure you describe it differently.
Yeah, so this solar array system right here that we're showing on the screen is sized to provide electricity throughout the year for the community center and the Willow Water Treatment Plant. So we'll have a line running from here over to the Willow Water Treatment Facility to tie into there as well. There wasn't enough room to put solar over there, and then shaded parking is kind of desired in hot areas, so this is a benefit to have some of that over the parking lot, maybe over some of the square.
I can see, I don't know if there's a minimal amount that makes it cost effective to put up, but I can see putting some out over the area out by the pool provides shade, maybe over where that concrete is over there, so people have some shade there.
That is definitely.
You know what I'm talking about, Monica? Mm-hmm. See what I'm saying? I don't know, it may not be worth it, and it may not be the right idea, but I'm just thinking out loud. We have a lot of space. So.
We are flexible, right? So we try to maximize the steel support and put a lot of panels on the steel, because if you don't, then the steel costs a lot of money when we raise the panels up, and we want to make sure we can get as many on there as possible for cost reasons.
Looks good.
Yep, but you'll be providing 526,000.7 megawatt hours of electricity throughout the year, and reduce all of the greenhouse gases associated with buying natural gas fired power from the utility.
So I don't have a lot of experience with solar. I imagine you did some analysis how much this building consumes, how much the water processing facility consumes, and that's how you kind of came up with this basic, this is what we think you need.
Right, so we actually logged into your PG&E accounts with the help of staff, and we downloaded what's called 15-minute interval data. So it gives us a snapshot of your usage throughout the year in every 15 minutes intervals. And then we take that, and there's a certain rate associated with that time of use of that power, and the model calculates all of the offset costs and avoided electricity costs for the utility.
So based on your kind of analysis, is it normal? I mean, do you expect us to sell power back to PG&E into their grid, or are you?
You do push power to the grid and you get a credit for it, but it's technically not considered a sale.
Okay.
Because if you were selling power, then you would be selling it at a wholesale rate, which would be not advantageous. So that's why we wanted to get under this net energy metering program, because they give you almost the same amount as you pay. So if you're paying 24.5 cents a kilowatt hour, which you are, then you get almost 24 cents as a credit when you push it out. Now, if you were selling it to them, they would want to buy it at 5 or 6 cents. And that's kind of where the net energy meter and 3.0 program is going.
So I apologize for my ignorance. Why would we push out anything though? Wouldn't we be consuming it all?
Good question.
It offsets your cost.
It offsets your cost.
Well, that's a great question. So in the summer, we have longer days and more sun. So we overproduce in the summer to generate credits that we can use in the winter when the days are shorter.
Got it.
And we're not producing as much with our rate.
And the program is at the same value of what you would be paying for. Credit is the same value of your cost.
It's close. Net energy metering version 1.0 gave you the same.
One to one of that.
Net energy metering 2, they took out a small fee for like what they call non-bypassable charges. And it's like all these little program fees that they add. So they made you pay that. But it was close
enough.
NEM 3 is nowhere near.
Yeah.
It's worse. So it doesn't make sense to even push it out to the grid with NEM 3.
Okay, but at some point, the final design is still up in the air and we could tweak that in.
It is. We can all sit down and have a committee or something and kind of go over it. We can move it around a little bit. But when we submit the California Energy Commission loan, we'll just have to make sure that we have the same production numbers. Because the California Energy Commission actually has a division of engineers that review all of our work and approve it to make sure that we're not overstating our savings. And then we'll have a project manager assigned by the California Energy Commission that will oversee the entire project as well. So it's almost like a third-party review.
Sure.
That we get and more additional cost. So the idea, like I said, mentioned before, was to take money that you already have in your operating budget, for spending with the utility, invest in these systems to reduce your operating costs. It provides a positive cash flow from day one, and then once the Energy Commission is paid off, you realize all of that savings is cash flow. Next, please. So we're going to be leveraging the ECA loan, which I had mentioned, and then also the Inflation Reduction Act, which will pay up to 30% of the project in a tax credit cash option payment. So we basically, when the project is done, we submit the application to the IRS, and then the U.S. Treasury will cut a check for up to 30% of the project. Disadvantaged communities, we get an extra 10%. Unfortunately, you don't qualify for that one. And then the O&M is also included in all of our financial projections, and we'll provide a performance guarantee to backstop any risk of any shortfall in savings. So we'll have a monitoring system on there. If it is not producing what we say, then we're going to be highly motivated to run out and fix it. We're also ready to write a check. So right now we're looking at a program with a base cost of just under $3 million. We're estimating that we can get a grant from the federal government in the amount of $764,432, which lowers your cost to $2.2 million. And then the return on investment at a 5% escalation rate, which is more than half or less of what PG&E has done over the last 40 years, will result in a savings to the district of almost $13 million. I also would like to show you the non-conservative, and I didn't put it on a slide, but if PG&E does continue to raise the rates at 11%, then this will be a $39 million savings district at a 1,319% return on investment.
What's the life of the program?
3 years is the life expectancy of the solar.
Okay.
And then there are certain pieces of equipment called inverters, where we have the replacement for those in year 20. So we buy an extended warranty on that for 20 years. And then in our cash flow projections, we have that equipment replacement in year 20. So we've accounted for that. Fantastic returns.
That's
why PG&E killed the program.
the life of the program longer than my life of the program, so we're good.
Yeah.
What type of maintenance costs, if any, over the 30 years of two?
Yeah, so the first year maintenance cost is nothing like the O&M of the water plant. For here, it'll be $11,196, and then that'll escalate 3% of the year. Or we could tie it to a CPI adjustment, whatever you're most comfortable
with. And what does that cost cover typically?
It usually costs, there's little filters in the inverters, so they'll do the filter changes. You look at all of the monitoring, so there's a technical review of how the system's performing on the monitoring system. Then they actually go and take a voltmeter and check the voltages of the strings. They make sure all the terminals are tight and not like corroding or rusting. And then there's cleaning, obviously, the panel cleaning. We typically include one cleaning, and we estimate in our performance a certain level of soil in the panels, so we just assume they're dirty when we size them. So we've been pretty successful in getting 102% of our production targets without ever cleaning. However, we do have one cleaning. Typically in the summer, you don't really need to clean when it rains out.
And that contract, that maintenance contract, is with Veolia, correct?
It is. And okay. If we're doing the maintenance contract, we guarantee the performance.
Yeah. You could talk to your colleague over there about what kind of dust we have building up on things. So,
Remember,
we're in the middle of an agricultural area, and depending on if it's corn or tomatoes, you may have more or less dust. And it may be clean, maybe a little bit more of an issue here.
Sure. Yeah, and we can adjust that O&M agreement to two cleanings, three cleanings, whatever you'd like. We're doing them in the city of Arvin right now, which is also in agriculture.
Sure. We're
starting with one, okay. See how it works.
Well, that's what I was suggesting.
Also, remember they're underwriting the performance, and so if they get dirty,
it's an incentive.
Exactly. Next slide, please. And then there's the environmental benefits. So this system here at the community center and the water treatment will reduce the greenhouse gas or the carbon dioxide equivalent of 368 metric tons. So everybody goes, what's that mean? So I went to the EPA website, and there's a calculator, and it kind of compares what that number means. So that's like, what does it say there? 72.6 homes electricity use for 1 year in the lower right-hand corner there. And then 87.6 gasoline-powered vehicles taken off the road. So there's a nice environmental benefit as well. And you also get what are called renewable energy credits, which you can save or sell. None of our financial models include the sale of these RECs because we don't know in the future how important they're going to be. So right now, if you don't need to sell them and make it financially justified, save them.
Yeah.
Right. And then someday, you know, a lot of the gross polluters need to buy those renewable energy credits to offset the pollution. So the demand for those is getting bigger and bigger as California goes greener and greener. Next, please. And then this is a picture of our office in San Francisco that monitors these types of systems to ensure that they're working on a real-time basis. And if they don't, they get an alarm, and everybody starts to freak out, and dispatching trucks. So I just like to show that picture. And then we also have AI overlay on this. So it actually helps us predict what went wrong. But it has human oversight, so it doesn't do anything automatically without a human checking the box saying, okay, let's do that. Next, please. So here's where we are in the journey for this. We started this back in August of 2023, and here today we're asking for the resolution for the loan application and the CEQA exemption. We'll finish off what's called the investment grade audit or analysis. The CEC calls it the feasibility study. They have a specific format. And we'll get that in, and we're thinking that might be funded around December of this year. They go on this fiscal year, and they have, it's a revolving loan fund. So as other entities pay back the loan, it replenishes the bank account, so to speak, so they can loan it out to others. And those payments come in at the end of June and the end of December. There's a waiting list. I don't think we'll make the July cut. We're going to try, but it may not come till December. And then they have to approve it at one of their commission meetings, which is very similar to a board meeting, and then the funding will be available. So conservatively speaking, this will probably be a project that will be installed in 2025. And that gives us plenty of time to work through where we want the solar panels, how it's going to look, what other deferred maintenance items we might want to include, so on and so forth. And then only with Veolia can you achieve all these great things. I will go through all of them. Thanks, please. Any questions?
Well, I asked most of the ones I had as they came up. There's initially no money, no checks being written to you guys until the loan comes through. Is that where your initial payment comes from?
Yeah, we cannot incur any implementation costs.
You said that in your
costs.
Initial introduction to us, yeah.
No, we will not charge anything until that funding is approved, or else you won't be able to get reimbursed for it. So the way the California Energy Commission loan works is, when we progress bill you, they're going to want a copy of that invoice and then a check showing that you paid us, and then they send you the money within 30 days.
Sure.
No,
I don't have any questions.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much. I'll open it up for any public comment. Is there any public? Yes, sir.
Can I go from here?
Thank you. No. If you can. We have online as well, so if you don't mind, if you could come to the mic just so we can capture it for online as well.
I'm all behind solar, I think that's what you're talking about, sir. And back here you can't hear very good.
Oh, okay.
And visual, you can't see very good. First time I've been here, but I've been a customer of solar for 2 years.
Oh.
And you can see my lifetime, my year, my month, it's I'm kicking.
You saving money?
Big time.
That's what I like to hear.
And my wife takes care of it. She has what they call the true, what they call it, each year.
Right, a true-up.
Okay.
What? A true-up.
True-up. See, she's got the term, he's got the term. I don't. I do the yards, they do the. But anyway, it's paying off. And then we got a lot of taxes from our, we got a big break from our IRS by doing all this stuff, 2 years in a row. So I'm a follower of solar.
Excellent.
And I recommend it if the board wants to pursue it in the future, maybe, or something. I would investigate it at least. I know it's expensive, but you got to think about the future. Like what this man said, this PG&E stuff is just here, and they're going to kill all of us financially. Amen.
Thank you, sir. Is there any other public comment?
Did you bring him with you?
Okay, you know your
song. Any other? No. Please.
You guys probably all remember I've been a big advocate of solar for a long time, so I'm super happy to be happening. Well done for bringing this and getting into net metering too, which is a big deal, which is great. Well done. Awesome. Appreciate it. But don't stop there. Let's go for net neutral. Let's keep going. Let's roll it out, go big, or go home. So, good
Thank
start.
You. Appreciate it. Bring it back. Any further board discussion?
I mean, based on the ROIs, it's how do you argue those? Pretty impressive numbers.
Then I will look for a motion.
I'll make a motion to accept staff's recommendation for the resolution.
I'll second that.
So before you go to a vote, just want to clarify that this resolution does two things. The first thing is it is authorized as needed to go forward, and once we get through the program, I'll just explain the loan. The second thing is a CEQA determination. And CEQA determination, there are exemptions that have been identified in this resolution for existing facilities and minor alterations to land. That has been analyzed by staff and Gloria to be applicable, and I just want to get that on the record that you are taking two actions in this resolution.
Great. Thank you so much. Okay, can we please get a roll call?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you so much. Motion carries. We'll move to item G2, discuss possible action to approve Go Securities as the security at the Cornell bathrooms.
Please don't stick green. It's an important topic.
It's an important topic. It's just a topic that I know you are just dying to get off your chest. So that's what made me.
And off my desk, yes. Good evening, Board. The staff report you have in front of you is a living document. On page 2 is where I took off from the last committee meeting on March 6th. And at that meeting, I was directed to contact some additional vendors. And when I say vendors, I'm talking about vendors, meaning general contractors. And I contacted 15 of them. And of the 15, I was only able to get 3 to come out and look at our property. And those 3 vendors were Go Securities, Construction West, and Giant Construction. Unfortunately, only 2 of those vendors gave us bids for the project. The Construction West vendor was explaining that he was going to have to, he would be able to do all the project, but he's having problems finding the actual locking mechanism for the gate. And with that, I already had 3 individual bids from a fence company and a lock company and an electrical company. That was Delta Fence, Access Door Solutions, and Lucas Electric. When I was working with those individuals, the 3 independent vendors, the lock, the fence, and the electricity, when we came together on a Zoom call, it became apparent that there wasn't going to be necessarily a project lead on it because they're all individual vendors. And if something were to go wrong during the process, I think there was going to be a lot of finger pointing to say who was responsible for why this project failed, if there were to be issues. So during this process, I was able to contact or work with a vendor called Go Securities. And he was the only vendor that they specialize in these types of projects. But he was the only vendor that offered a cellular solution for staff to actually log onto their laptop. They could program the locks to open and close at certain dates and times. And also, it offers us the ability to enter codes and remove codes from the system if we were to rent the facilities out on weekends. So as we went through this, even though Go Securities is the most expensive in this series. There's also a component in there of the cellular solution that they offer. It ranges from $44 to $54 a month, depending on the amount of data updates that we do, and that would be entering codes, taking codes out, those sorts of things. The pictures that you see up on the screens, that's Go Securities. But that is the type of gate that they would have on the bathrooms, and there would be 4 individual gates. And then you see the fencing on the far left. That's the type of fencing that they would have on the upper portion of the bathroom to prevent people from climbing over the walls there. So we're looking at actually moving the gate from where it is to closer inside the bathroom, and it would be ADA compliant. We've already checked that it has the width, it has the would be a closer on it that would be hydraulic. It has to have it has to be open to 5 pounds of pull per ADA. And this vendor is telling me that he can accomplish all of those things. And And with that, I will open it up for questions.
So I have a question. I was looking at the warranties. It's 24-month service warranty, normal usage, being damaged caused by conditions. Have we thought out like what that's going to look like? Because we seem to have repetitive issues, and I know that this is going to solve some of those issues, but we've not had a good track record at all with these. Anything that we've done to try and prevent something happening with our restrooms?
Correct. And even with this solution, if we programmed the bathrooms to open at 7 in the morning and lock at 5, during those hours, it wouldn't prevent anybody from going in there and causing vandalism. But at least we'd be able to secure those during the evenings and on weekends with this solution.
But if they vandalize this solution and these locks, we're on the hook for that, correct?
Absolutely. If it's an act of vandalism, we're on the hook for it. If it's something that their equipment fails, they are.
I'd like to hear from Parks and Rec to let us know. You guys are the ones that have been intimately involved in this.
Yes.
I'm just coming on to see if I agree with you or not. So why don't you sell me?
Well, it sells itself, but. At the end of the day, you know the level of vandalism that those bathrooms have incurred.
Yes.
Each instance is several thousands of dollars, and it prevents residents from taking advantage and utilizing the facilities. So, you know, we try to look at solutions that were the least cost effective, or at least the most cost effective. And, you know, securing the bathrooms, obviously there's a missing section of fencing to allow people to climb in. So getting that resolved was priority one. Then priority two is, okay, well, then how do we allow for the bathrooms to be utilized without adding staff time on to locking and unlocking? Because most of the vandalism seems to take place in the evenings, after park hours, or on the weekends when no one's visiting the bathrooms from the staff standpoint. So we thought that of all the three quotes we brought, you know, this one made the most sense. It's that there's not a lot of deviation between the three quotes. They're very close to each other. And for the monthly fee to allow them to unlock and lock from their cell phones or laptops is certainly more cost effective than adding staff time to go over there and lock and unlock.
Yeah, it actually seems to solve that problem.
It also gives them the ability to do one-time use codes or limited use codes for rentals. So on the weekends, they can set up a code.
The party, here's the code, it's
absolutely
only good for you, and it's by Monday, it's no longer any good.
Absolutely.
So you're on board with this also?
I am, and I also like the idea of seeing how these locks perform, because we could potentially use them in other solutions.
I don't have any further questions. It's coming recommended from Parks and Rec, I assume.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I'm going to play devil's advocate.
Please do.
Was there any consideration in just getting rid of the bathrooms?
So we did ask staff the cost to remove the bathrooms, and it is more than the quote to do this.
Okay, my follow-up question to that is, if this doesn't work, what's next? Like, how much money are we going to continue to spend to have bathrooms that just get vandalized?
I would not recommend the solution that didn't work.
Okay, that's fair.
At the end of the day, though, no matter what we do, if people want to destroy something, they're going to destroy something. I think this solution is going to be enough impetus to prevent people from doing that and being.
Well, and the fact is that light, they don't operate in the daylight. And so if we have these things locked up and secure, they're locked up currently, but they're not secure because of the gaps. And if we have them locked up and secure, nighttime is when they can hide, when damage occurs. And so I think if it's only open for daylight hours or for usage by the people that are there, then that may hopefully, you know, again, they can go in and mess up the mirror and whatever the picture showed you earlier, but you can't do anything.
No.
So.
And it increases the value and the usability of our parks.
I can't see getting rid of them. I mean, Brian and I have talked about this many mornings, and getting rid of them, I don't think was ever really good, great idea.
So if there's no more questions to the board, I'd like to open public comment. Please, sir.
I thought I heard a couple of comments about during the week, but not on the weekends. Maybe I misunderstood. Brian just said something about during the week, but not open on the weekends or something.
When the damage is occurring.
Damage occurs at night.
At night and on the weekends.
You know, that they'd be open 7 days a week. Through the hours,
yes, sir. I think the concern was that staff is not available on the weekends to be able to open, which is why this makes a viable solution.
The computer can open.
Absolutely,
on the weekends.
Yes.
Yeah, that great question, Rob. Thank you. So somebody doesn't have to actually get on their phone at 8 o'clock Saturday morning until you program it.
Program that way, and then you can do variations from the computer.
Sure, it can always be changed. Absolutely. But okay, fantastic. Thank you.
Do we have any other public comment? Awesome. Okay, we'll bring it back to the board for a vote.
I just have one more question.
Please.
You mentioned of a monthly fee. Do you know what that cost is?
That listed on there? Yeah, it was listed in there. It's the $44 to $54.
Thank you.
Which is at current rates. That is minimal time. Okay. Can I get a motion?
A motion to approve.
Second.
Can we get a roll call vote, please?
Director Porter, aye.
Director
Couteau?
Aye.
Director Graves?
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. Thank you so much for all the hard work. This has been a big one. All right. Any manager, general manager?
No.
Okay. Do we have, we have the director reports. We had the committee meetings. Was communications held in the absence of Director Graves?
The communication.
Okay. And then the Parks and Rec.
Well, pretty much we covered everything that we discussed. There was, besides the major item for a bit about pickleball, folks want to continue to ask for us to release a tennis court for dual striping purposes. So the pickleball folks came in. A very large amount of people showed up for that. At this point, though, there's still some questions about how that affects the tennis association as far as allowing for tournaments. So staff should go back and just clarify a couple items, and then we'll be brought back to the board for a decision. And they're very passionate, and their group's getting bigger. So
awesome, thank you. Was there anything out of the water and wastewater?
We once again revisited the building as we do with every meeting, and we're going to be bringing something to the board at the next meeting, which I think will finally get us on the road to making a decision on what we're going to do moving forward. So there's more to come on that. We also discussed Veolia's contract. There's been a tremendous change to our infrastructure with dehydrogenation, adding a well, these other things, and so Veolia has come to staff and said, hey, it's time for us to, it hasn't been addressed since 2016. So there's gonna be a cost change, an increase that Veolia's asking for, and we'll be bringing that to the board as staff, and legal work out some of the hiccups that are through there. And they're really working well together, and I think we're gonna come to a really useful solution. Other than that, we're going to give the committee the 3rd of July office.
Great, thank you so much. All the other items were there. Perfect. Any future agenda items for board? All right, hearing none, we will go to adjourn at 8:03. Thank you.